Good evening, everyone. This is welcome to the third session of Meditation 101. So let's start by doing the nine-round breathing meditation. I know if you remember that from last time. So, would you know, just keep your back straight. And then I'll just go over this very quickly. The purpose of nine-round breathing is to get rid of the imbalanced energy that's stuck in our channels. And according to our tradition, there are 72,000 channels or pathways in our bodies, sort of similar to our nervous system. But the channels are non-physical. And so when the reason that the energy is stuck in the channels, well, it was caused by the mind. And the mind rides on energy. It's always together with this energy. So it's like the mind rides on energy, like a rider on a horse. So if you don't concentrate, your mind becomes imbalanced. Your mind is full of stories. And it's very weak and scattered. But when you, join it together into one, like a creek, small creek, so join it to one river, it becomes very powerful. So this is when you focus on an object. So when you balance your mind becomes flexible and it can be turned into something positive. So we balance our mind through concentration by focusing on something. So it's sort of like an antidote for stress. So we start with a nine-round breathing. And what we do is examine our mind and think, is it negative, is it positive, or neutral? So if it's neutral, then we just breathe normally when we do this exercise. But if it's negative, we exhale forcefully. So I don't know if you remember this, we take our left hand and we block our left nostrils and inhale through our right nostril. And then, you know, we switch. We do that three times, and then we switch with our right hand, you know, right nostril. We do that three times. And then the last three rounds, we breathe through both nostrils in and out, okay? All right, so let's start by with your left hand. And then if your mind is still negative, you just repeat the practice again, the nine-round breathing meditation again, several times if you need to. And then the next one to do would be the breathing meditation. So you can just focus on your breath going in and out, or actually out and then in, out and in. And you can also count if you like. You can count to 7, 14, 21, 108, or whatever you want to. So let's start with that. So let's do get into our meditation posture and concentrate on our breathing. Does anyone have any questions or comments about the first two sessions? Okay, so I'd like to talk a little bit about the three types of meditation. Review meditation is simply recalling a teaching or something, you know, from an actual lecture or something that you read in a book. And just going over the topics, recalling it. So you don't need to have a formal sitting meditation session to do review meditation. And the other one is analytical meditation. And that's when you look at this topic from different angles and different viewpoints. You analyze it. And from different angles. And maybe compare it to something to see whether it's really true, if it's really happened in your life, if you've experienced something like that. Until you reach an aha moment, something shifts, maybe in your mind or in your heart. And then what you do is you meditate single-pointedly on that shift until it's becomes, more, not merely knowledge, but something that leads you with, a shift, something that really touches you. And so you take that teaching into heart, and that's when you have an experiential understanding of that topic. So that's analytical meditation, and again, you don't need to have a meditation session, a sitting place to sit in order to do that. You can do that anywhere. And also, you can also do that with other people, you know, and in a discussion review session or something like that. But when you're doing this and you lose your concentration while you're analyzing, then you shift from that and you focus on your breath, going, or count your breath, going out and in for more control. And then when you gain your concentration back, then you go back to the analysis. So as I said, mentioned before, there are different things that can be your object of meditation. Hopefully you've chosen one and you started your meditation practice at home and during the day. There's objects, physical objects, such as a flower or a color or light or an image.
So the object that you pick, should you stare at it while you're trying to meditate, or?
Right, I was going to go into that.
Okay, great.
Okay. All right, so to achieve concentration, you do that in relation to a single object of meditation. So even if it's your breath, then, as I said before, you try to keep it on either, you know, the feeling, the coolness of the air going in and out of your nostrils, or if you want rising and falling of your abdomen. But don't switch, you know, because that would be changing the meditation object. Some people use a holy image, an image of the Virgin Mary, Jesus, a Buddha, and there's a lot of advantage to doing that, especially in our practice, because you get a lot of merit doing that. But once again, what you do is you get, it's an object, it could be a pebble, anything, all right? And then you look at it, you examine it, the physical thing. You look at the shape, you look at the color, and then you hold that mental image of that object without looking at it. So what you're doing is you're focusing the mind not on the external physical object, but on the internal object. So it's not a visual thing, it's a mental thing. So then, so when you're thinking about it, and some parts of the object become clear, like, for example, you can really see the nose really well, then you focus, you zero on that, in on that. And then you keep an attention on that. And then maybe you see the eyes, you know, like the, but you can't see the rest of the image very clearly, but you focus on what you can see clearly, like that nose and the eyes. And then when the parts become unclear, then you go back and you look at the entire image again. And even though, you know, at the beginning it's very unclear, you have to keep going back and forth to do that, you know, it'll just be for a few seconds that it'll be clear, and then you lose the image again. But that's all right. And then you just keep persisting. And then pretty soon you'll be able to recall it longer and longer, like maybe 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, and so forth. And let's see, there was someone who mentioned, I think he's not here today, but last week he mentioned, what about meditating on your breath while you're moving? And I think he was either running or cycling. I think he may have been running, jogging. And that's perfectly fine. What you do is just pace yourself. You count your in-breaths and your out-breaths by the number of footsteps that you make. Like you might be having your right foot, and you might go in, and then out, and so forth. And so you can meditate outside, you know, your meditation room, you know, between meditation sessions, so you can do it during the day. And then there was someone who mentioned, I think this gentleman, about whether music could be a meditation object. So I asked my teacher, and he says, well, it really depends. If you If you're listening to music in order to reduce your disturbing thought or negative thought, then that would be a valid meditation object. But if you're just listening to the music to relax, then it's not. So it depends on that, what your motivation is, why you're doing it. Okay, because, you know, the purpose of meditation is to reduce disturbing or negative thought. It's not just about relaxing. Okay, so now I'd like to talk about obstacles to meditation. So there are two main obstacles, excitement and laxity. You know, excitement is when you just can't settle your mind. Your mind's going crazy, like, you know, the monkey mind. So in this tradition, excitement is defined as a scattering to an attractive object. So when that happens, you try to bring your focus back to your breath. And then you visualize the object, your meditation object, as very small and very heavy. Or you can reflect on some sobering, thought subject, like impermanence or death. You check your posture and you lower the light, decrease the light. So that was what you do when you experience excitement. Now for laxity is when you're distracted inwardly. You still have the object, but it's not clear. And it even can lead to sleepiness. So that's the opposite. So again, you check your posture and you open your eyes wider. So, you know, you're letting the light in. You can even think about light. You can meditate on the idea of light. And you think about something joyful rather than, you know, the sobering topic. This time you're thinking about something joyful. You think of inspiring objects of meditation. Try to get enough sleep. If still that doesn't work, then go and take a walk. Wash your face with cool water or go out and look at the stars or something. So that's what you do when you have laxity or dullness. It happens. Now there's two exercises that I could do. This is when, you know, nothing's working and you probably, the first one, you can do with other people, when other people are around. The second one you can't. Okay, and you'll know why. Okay, so this one is called the forceful method on how to minimize the energy of the excited mind. So what you do, you can exhale and inhale 5-10 times, but in our practice, let's just do tonight, what we do is the exhale through your mouth and then inhale through your nose and count one. And you do that 5 times. Exhale, inhale 1, exhale, inhale 2, all the way. And then at 5, you hold your breath. You don't exhale, you hold your breath. And then you visualize this white round energy at your head. And it's going down your channel, your central channel. The central channel doesn't go this way. It actually goes to the back of your, like down your spinal cord. So you think of this energy, white round energy, going down from your head all the way down to the area 4 fingers below your navel. And then when you visualize that, what you do is you contract the muscles in your pelvic floor. And then at the same time, you visualize a yellow round energy moving up and then stopping at the top of the white energy. And then you focus on that energy. And you keep holding your breath and try to keep that image as long as you can and then exhale. So that's the whole exercise. So exhale, inhale 5 times. Then hold your breath, visualize that white energy coming down, and then the yellow, and then, you know, close your pelvic floor, then the yellow light comes up, touches, try to hold it as long as you can, this image, and exhale. Okay? Okay. All right. So let's do that. Okay? All right. So exhale and inhale 5 times. Exhale through your mouth. Inhale through your nose. One. Two. Three. Four. Five. Then you imagine this, you're exhaling the negative energy through your mouth and nose. So that's...
I couldn't imagine any lights. I couldn't see a halo. None of it. I couldn't visualize it.
Yeah, so it's just like a white, round energy, not a real halo, but just this little light. Yeah, it takes practice. You know, because this is a different meditation object from what you've been doing. And this is what you do when you know, your mind is excited. So it takes practice. Yeah, you just can't, you know, may not be able to do that right away. But you just try, you know, just try the this exercise. Okay, so the next one is instructing, it's a forceful method on how to bring the energy of the mind. It's mixing your mind with space. And this is what you do when you have lethargy, when you feel sluggish. Okay, so what you do is you sit comfortably, then you visualize a white light by your navel, and imagine that white light is your mind. Then you say very loudly the word, Peh, like that. And then you imagine by the power of Peh, the white light shoots through your crown, through the ceiling, and to the blue sky, or the dark sky, and imagine that your mind mixes with the sky. Okay, and then you don't say Peh. You have to say it, you know, forcefully, Peh, so that you're really, you know, shooting it up. Okay?
How do you spell that word?
Well, I think it's P-H-E-T. We don't say, pronounce the H, but I'm just guessing it's Peh, or it could be P-H-A with an umlaut and T. I'm not sure, but anyway, it's Peh, Peh. Okay, so you sit comfortably, and think that there's this white light by your navel, and that white light is your mind. And this is when you're kind of drowsy, sleepy, feeling kind of low. Okay. Now I would say, Peh! And your mind shoots up into the ceiling, out the roof, way up into the sky, to the stars, and it mixes there. Okay, so it's like you're lying down, you know, during the day, you're lying down on the grass, like in the middle of a park, and you're looking up at the sky. It's like that. It's a clear sky. Okay, any other questions about these exercises, nine round breathing meditation, you know, excitement, lethargy.
So when do you choose to do one of these different meditations? I mean, just how you feel that day? I mean, what you're thinking about?
Well, the one that you should probably do is to sit and meditate on your meditation object. So what you do is you start with the nine round breathing to sort of, you know, decrease your stress. And then you can go into the breathing meditation, if it's still, you know, to neutralize your mind. And then your mind is ready. And then you focus on your meditation object, whatever that is. And you just sit there and think of just your meditation object, you look at it, you know, and then try to remember it, and then put it aside, and then sort of focus on it without looking at it. So you have a mental image of that object. And, and then of course at the beginning, it's short, frequent sessions. So you want to come back and meditate again. And then when your mind becomes more stable, then you have fewer longer sessions. So that's what you do. And then when you have your excited mind, if your mind gets too excited, then, you know, you can do that exercise. Or if it becomes, you know, sort of dark and, you know, it could be like you might be a little bit depressed or whatever, then you do the one that we just said, the pay one. Yes,
that,
sir?
That brings to mind another question. What is the central purpose of meditation?
The purpose?
Is it relaxation? Is it a clear mind? What is the central purpose of meditation?
The purpose and power of meditation is to reduce disturbing or negative thought. It's not about relaxing. Now, the product of concentration is a calm and peaceful mind. And that's how, you know, and you concentrating is focusing single-pointedly on an object. But the purpose is to reduce disturbing thought. It's not about relaxing.
Would you say that meditation is maybe about staying in the present moment?
Well, it can be. It can. There are practices, many practices, that we'll do. You know, that's not, most of them should be about being in the present moment, yes.
Before when I started meditating, I would think of, okay, it's a self-improvement type of thing, right? But then I started thinking, wait a minute, if it's self-improvement, I'm not in the present moment, right? So, because that would give me anxiety a little bit, you know, because it would make me think of the future. I'm trying to better myself. Well,
no, not really. What you're doing is what you're trying not to do is to extend the past or create the future. If you're taking care of the present moment, then you're taking care of whatever has happened before by choosing your thoughts and your words and your actions carefully, and that takes care of the future. If you're acting right now, there shouldn't be any problem. But that doesn't mean that you can't, you know, be proactive, you know. There's absolutely nothing about that.
All right.
Right. But there are different meditations that we've done, like meditation like the, you know, being like the ocean, you know. We'll have one where we do it for equanimity. Yeah. And you know, it's just that we just don't have control over what we've done in the past or what's, you know, might happen in the future. The only time we have control is what we're doing right now in the present moment. So a lot of it is, yeah, that's true. Yes, ma'am.
Are there other common meditations where you move your mind to different parts besides your head? Because I felt very rooted, like my mind is so rooted in my head that I couldn't do that previous meditation where you move it to your stomach. You know, and I was wondering if there were other, like, common meditations I could look up to work on that.
Oh yeah, there's whole body meditation. You know, there's one that he, a 14 movement meditation that Geshe-la does. That's from the Thai tradition. You know, with different movements of the body. And of course, there's walking meditation where you're focusing on your, you know, how your feet moves. You know, stepping up, forward, down, you know, feeling the earth, and so forth. So, yeah, it's not always in the mind. Yeah, but you're certainly using your mind and your thoughts to control them.
I would like a suggestion, because I used to do that as well. I tried an isometric meditation, where you basically start from your feet and you tense your feet up, your muscles in your feet, and you stop, and then you go to your calves, right? And you stop. You tense up piece by piece, going all the way up to your head, right? And then you follow that with breathing. And because I used to get caught up in my head a lot. So I found that the tensing up of the muscles would also relax me. Well, because I'm not the type of that will fall asleep while I'm meditating. My mind works a little bit faster. So I try to, it kind of relaxes me a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, that's sort of like the standing body meditation that we have. And then, of course, during the day, you know, when you have negative emotions come up, that's something that you can do, too, is you notice the places, what happens to you when you're angry or you're jealous. Or, you know, any kind of sad, whatever, you notice that, you know, how maybe your stomach has butterflies, your breathing is slower or faster, you know, all those things. And you notice, that's what anger feels like. And it sort of diffuses it because, you know, you're sort of noticing, it's like a vigilance or introspection of what's going on with you. And then you notice that it gives you sort of a power over how you are going to react to whatever outside circumstance is going on. Yeah, I think there's this lady right here up front, right? Question.
So I haven't picked my meditation object yet. A little anxious about picking it, oddly enough. So do you have any recommendations? Should it be something that you're attached to or that you're ambivalent towards? And it should be something that you should be able to grab hold of for a while and get a mental image of it before you close your eyes?
Well, yes, absolutely. You have to have something that you're familiar with. But you know, it's up to you. Whatever you want to meditate on is fine. I wouldn't make it very complicated, though. You know, something fairly simple. And, of course, you know, it's really nice to have something that inspires you. You know, like what I said, like this holy image, whatever that could be. But it can be whatever, you know, it's your choice. But I wouldn't do something, probably wouldn't be good to do like your favorite dessert. You know, that probably wouldn't be really good, you know, because that's all you'll think about is wanting to stop and, eat it, you know. So I maybe not that, you know, or anything hateful like, you know, somebody you didn't really like. Or something that that's sort of disgusting to you wouldn't be good either, you know. Maybe something more inspiring, I would think. Yeah. But, you know, it's your choice because it's, you want to keep it, so. Any other comments? These are very great. You know, it's very helpful for other people to share their experiences. It takes a very long time to get to that point. I had it took a long time for me to meditate. I think I mentioned to you last week, personally to you, about how long it took for me to keep my mind on my breath. I could hardly, at the beginning, it probably wouldn't last more than 30 seconds. That's how scattered my mind was. I mean, you know, so I listened to a tape by Thich Nhat Hanh that would sound the bell like every, I think it was probably every minute. And he would also guide it. And guiding meditation helped me a lot. You know, like you're saying to yourself, in, out, you know, we're breathing in or breathing out, you know, breathing in, then breathing out, in, out, and then I'd hit the bell like that. And that was the only way that, well, that was very helpful at the very beginning because I couldn't keep it. I couldn't do that first meditation, well, not the 9 round, but the breathing meditation that we did here. The first session, that was not possible. I would, your mind would be completely scattered within a minute. And so I didn't know whether that happened to some of the people here, but it was very helpful. That's why I used the bell. And I don't have to, you know, physically hit the bell. I can, you know, just listen now to a recording of the bell. And that would keep me coming back to my breath over and over and over and over again. But then after, you know, a while, I can't remember how long it took, it just became very familiar, and then you needed it less and less often, and then pretty soon you only need it at the beginning and then at the end. And then pretty soon, I don't know, maybe a few years later, you don't even need to sit. You know, just you can calm your mind. And, of course, it gets scattered when something happens, but then you bring your, you know, you go after, you try to solve the problem, and then when you solve it, it calms down again. So it's just a matter of practice. But, you know, if I can do it, anybody can do it. Okay, so if I'd like to do this, the meditation on transforming negative experiences into the positive. It's handout number 8, if you have it. So you focus your, you know, sit in your, get into your meditation posture and focus your attention on your breath. Yes, uh-huh. Can you hold on for a second? Hold on a second.
Are there handouts?
Yes, they're on the web.
Oh.
There, you go to the Kathampa Center website and go to Spiritual Programs, and then, let's see, what is it? Introductory courses or introductory, I think it's class or whatever, and then Meditation 101, and then all the handouts are there.
All right.
Okay. Okay, oh, no problem. Okay, so you focus your attention on your breath. And then you think of your motivation. By taking time to do this meditation practice, may I develop my mind and become a wiser and kinder person in order to be of benefit to all beings. Now spend a few moments thinking about your day and the experiences that you have had during the day. Focus especially on difficult situations that may have arisen. Situations in which you may have become impatient, lost your temper, seen others as problems or enemies, perhaps even lashed out at others verbally. remembering that the situation is over, that you are simply experiencing memories now of something that is gone and is now in the past, bring a difficult situation to mind. Remember what happened from beginning to end. Watch and observe your mind and your behavior as you replay the situation. Use all the techniques and abilities of mindfulness that you have learned in order to disidentify with those feelings and actions as much as possible, to simply watch and observe dispassionately. Now think about the disadvantages and harmful nature of the negative responses that took place during that situation. Think about how you felt while being impatient and angry. Did you feel happy, comfortable, at peace? When that angry feeling led to angry words and actions, what effect did that have on you, on others around you? Did it make them happy? Did it make the situation easier? Did the angry behavior help bring the situation to a positive solution? Did it help everyone, yourself and the others included, to feel good and understand each other better? Now think about how you might have handled the situation differently, with a calm, balanced, and open attitude, without anger or impatience or resentment. Think about how your and others' experience of the situation might have been completely different. Generate a strong feeling of how extraordinary it would be able to manage different difficult situations just like this one, with a calm and peaceful mind, uncontrolled by anger and agitation. Now replay the entire situation in your mind from beginning to end, imagining it completely differently. Relive the situation and imagine yourself reacting perfectly, with warmth and openness toward the other people, with calm and balance, and without any anger or agitation. Imagine how the situation might have played itself out in this totally different way. Is the outcome different? How do you feel about yourself at the end of the interchange? Pleased or disappointed? What kind of experience do others have in your replay, positive or negative? Make a strong determination that the next time you encounter difficulties that try your patience, you will take a breath and a step back and will try to respond with openness and patience as you did in your meditation, keeping your mind under control and out of the control of anger. In addition, make a strong determination that each time you find yourself responding with impatience, agitation, and anger in the future, you will practice the same meditation in order to gradually overcome these negative response patterns and train the mind to respond with kindness, balance, and patience. Then we dedicate the positive energy created by practicing this meditation exercise to bring peace and well-being to ourselves, our family, friends, and all others in every moment of every day. Okay, so now I'd like to do a very short class participation exercise. So if you just could break into some small groups and talk about the meditation that we just did on transforming negative experiences into the positive, and talk about, you know, an experience that you had and how you could have handled it more skillfully by using this technique that was just mentioned by mindfulness. Okay, and then we'll come back again and maybe you could share some of the experiences that you talked about. Okay? All right. And I'll hit the bell to tell you when to come back together again. So just some small groups. Do we have any volunteers to share any negative experience that happened and then perhaps a more skillful way of responding to that situation? Anyone? It doesn't have to be your own. You could talk about someone else's.
We were talking about our situations, and my situation today, I was actually at the hospital with a doctor, and he made a mistake, right? And I guess I got caught up in the moment, and I got a little angry at him, you know, because it's my health, you know? And he had made a mistake, and I go to the VA. And the VA is a very tough system to work with. It's getting better, you know, but it's a tough system to work with. He made a mistake. And I kind of put myself in his shoes is what I did, you know, because I got really angry, you know, and it almost took over there for a minute. But then I realized, wait a minute, you know, he works in a system that's very hard to work in. Like, trying to put myself in his shoes to try to understand, like, you know, that's what got me not so overwhelmed at the moment because it was getting there, you know. It's kind of like not letting my emotions kind of grip your intelligence almost, you know, because then you just get out of control.
Oh, thank you. Anyone else?
So I had a situation today where somebody did something that was like purposefully trying to undermine me a little bit, try to make me look bad, right? And it made me angry, right, that they were doing so. I didn't understand why they would do something like that. And as I tried to examine that during the meditation, every time I looked at it, that feeling of anger just kind of came back, and I couldn't really find a way to flip it around and make it positive and understand how to look at it in a different way. And every time I looked at it again, it's just I still couldn't understand why this person was behaving this way. I mean, it was like a personal assault on me, you know, almost. So I had trouble turning that into a positive. I don't know.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for sharing. Anyone else? Anyone have any suggestions about how he could have turned that around? Since it's very impersonal. It's not us. Any questions? Here's Susan right here.
I can talk loud.
Well, no, it's not. It's being streamed.
Whenever I am in a situation where I'm angry and I feel like somebody has done something to me, it's personal to me, they're doing it on purpose, I'm angry about it, I try to put myself in them, I guess. Be very empathetic, think about how they're feeling and try to think about different things, like try to figure out if it weren't a personal attack against me, why would they be doing this? And if I think about it that way, a lot of things come to mind and it takes that personal bit of it away, and it kind of undermines and makes the personal attack kind of go away and helps me imagine that maybe they had an issue going on that caused them to act the way that they did. Somebody didn't show up for work today, and I had my own stuff to do, and because she wasn't there, I had to do her stuff too. And it was like, you know, she never thinks about the impact that it's going to have on someone else. But then when I started thinking about really truly would she not show up to work if she remembered, would she not be here if, you know, I had to take the personal, she's not doing this so that I've got more work to do. This is happening because she has something going on. And I found out later, of course, that she did have something going on. And then I felt like I should have done her tasks with more urgency than I put into them. But I always try to think about how somebody else might be feeling or what might be the roadblocks, what might be their junk that's making them react the way that they're acting. Instead of it being a personal attack against me, maybe it's their own insecurities or something that happened in their life or something else. And so I try to figure that out. It helps me personally to be less angry.
Thank you. Anyone else? Comment on that? Oh, behind you, Susan.
With the whole undermining you thing, I think, yeah, you can't just, because in some cases people will just try to undermine you and they will just try to do something to harm you out of their own benefit. And I guess you can't really, you're going to have anger from that. But I guess the way to form, to change that into something else would to try to feel compassion for them in their situation. They might not see you as anything but an obstacle to get over, but you have to feel compassion for them because there are people that, like Thich Nhat Hanh, during the Vietnam War, he protested in various ways. He had to leave his own country, and he still said publicly that he felt compassion for the Vietnamese government and that he wanted nothing but the best for them, but sometimes bad things just kind of happen, and sometimes people just want those bad things to happen. That's it.
Great, thank you. Anyone else? Oh, yes.
I just wanted to I guess, go on with that, what they're saying. I noticed that judgments, right? For me, I've kind of gotten, I try to my best, I know it's very hard, right, not to judge other people, right, because I'm very hard on myself, right? And what I've noticed is that when I judge others, right, I start losing compassion for them, right? And if I'm judging, I'm losing that compassion, and then when I start doing that, I lose my self-compassion. And that's what's very important to me, because I'm very, very hard on myself. I'll say things to myself that I won't say to anybody, right? And if I lose my self-compassion, then I start feeling other people are judging me, right? So I try as best as I can, regardless of, like the doctor today, you know, I could have said, you know, this guy, whatever, but when I found myself starting to do that, that judgment going on with him, I had to stop it, you know, because at the end of the day, I mean, if I get angry, like, I used to get very angry before, and like, it would exhaust me. I would take my whole day out. You know, literally, I would wipe out the whole day. It would, like, I would feel tired, and so that's what's helped me. It's not, like, judging people, like, I guess. You know, not, well, I try. It's very hard.
Thank you. Well, in our tradition, we try to keep this very secular, but in our tradition, we have the concept of karma, that nothing happens without a reason. Everything has a cause. So, for example, you might have a baby, you know, a helpless, sweet baby who has had a chance to do, you know, nothing but live, you know, and breathe, and hasn't done anything wrong to anyone. So why would something bad happen to the sweet baby? And so what we also believe in previous lives, you know, beginningless lives. And so we believe that obviously, you know, the reason why something bad would happen to a helpless baby or to yourself, to, you know, when someone you've never met before, somebody, you know, that person wants to attack you and you haven't even seen him before, then why would that happen? And then the reason is that we believe that something has actually happened, that we have done something in a previous life or previously in this present life to cause that to happen. There was a reason for it to occur. So, for example, you could have been, you know, like someone could have been, that baby in a previous life could have been someone who murdered other beings. And so the projecting cause would be that they would either be born in a hell realm or they would have a very short life, or be born as a, you know, lower animal or as a human, but have maybe very poor conditions, where food was scarce, shelter was very poor, you know, conditions were very, very poor and needy. And so that would happen. And so that's what I do. Once you've sort of, your emotions have calmed down, then you think, well, why did this happen? Obviously, haven't done anything like that to this person. Why would that person do that to me? And so that would be it. And it would immediately cause you to think, I'm glad that's over with. That's never going to happen again. I've exhausted that karma, that negative karma. So that's how we deal with it in our tradition, with the law of cause and effect. And of course, there's cause and effect, you know, that's actually, it's, you know, scientifically proven also, you know, that there, nothing happens randomly. There's always a reason for that. So that sort of, when you think about that, it immediately calms your mind, you know, oh, I just have done this to this person. That's why that person just is helplessly, insulting me or saying things unkind about me behind my back. And of course, the problem is that, again, that person will, that will happen to that person later. So it's very unfortunate. Yes, sir. If you wait for the microphone.
Hi.
I don't know if you really need to understand the reason why somebody's mad or why somebody did something, because you can't understand why. What you need to do is be able to control yourself and your anger or your irritation. And you need to be aware of what it is, what's happening to you, and let it go. I see no value in understanding why somebody does something.
Well,
then you're going to judge them.
Right, yes. But you may want to think that maybe you did a little something to cause that problem, because maybe you did have something that you did that made that person angry at you, and you don't want to repeat that. Maybe you didn't even, you know, say anything, but maybe you had a smirk on your face, or you said something that they may have said, you know, that you had forgotten, that you may have insulted them or said something negative about that person, and then maybe, aha, that's the reason I'll never do that again. So I think you do have to, of course it's true. You have to, that's the only thing you can control in a situation is your own reaction, but you should also examine the situation when you're calm and see if there was anything that you did that may have caused that a person to attack you or to do anything negative to you. I think that that's true. For example, maybe if the doctor said something, gave you a wrong diagnosis, well, maybe you forgot to say something. Maybe you forgot to explain that, oh, I was taking this medication all along, and then that's, you know, and I forgot to mention that. And I didn't think that it had anything to do with my course, you know, the medical procedure, because it really wasn't a prescription. It was an herbal medication or something like that. It could, you know, it's quite possible that maybe there was something there. So I think you do have to examine a little bit, I would think. For example, maybe you're wondering why all of a sudden, while you're driving, all the truck drivers and all the other cars are honking at you. And then you're thinking, well, why are they honking? Well, that's okay. I'm fine. I'm cool. You know, it's okay. Maybe they're having an agenda. But if, you know, you have three or four truck drivers honking at you, then maybe you might examine, you know, your driving ability. And you know, maybe you're changing lanes without signaling. Maybe you turned, you're going down the wrong way on a one-way street. You know, maybe there's something there. And I'm not trying to, you know, belittle what you're saying.
But can you do that without being angry?
This is, you know, like when you're calmed down, you have to think
right later.
You have to examine, you know, later on, like you said in this transforming and every experiences, you know, just think. Later on, you know, maybe I had a little something to do with that. Maybe. And you know, it's noticed, I talked about this a lot when my mother was alive. You know, she was totally against, you know, my becoming a nun, so forth. And you know, so we had a difficult time together. And this went on for quite a few years. And then my practice got a little bit deeper, and I started to understand more about handling negativity. And then when I was controlling this, I noticed, my, she's been so nice lately. You know, she's the same. She's the same wonderful person. But, you know, it's the way I was looking at her and taking everything wrong, you know, because she'll say, now, you know, just take a moment and just look at it my way for a second, you know. And we got along really well after that. So, you know, it takes a while. It's just, you take little steps, slowly, you know, things will start, your wisdom will increase, and you'll finally get to understand things better, unless you're, you know, like many of you, are you already have it. it's taken a long time. Well, I think our time is up. So what if you would please continue your daily meditation practice, and then at the end of the day, reflect on all the what happened during the day, whether it was positive or unskillful, and then uses meditation, transforming negative experiences, which is, you know, on the website. And then next week we'll talk more about visualization meditation, and we'll do purification with light meditation. Thank you. Thank you very much for joining in on the class participation. Thank you. Have a nice evening.